Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Qasim Ali Himani and Sheikh Qasim. Assalamu alaikum to both of you and welcome to the show.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you so much.
You're welcome back there,
Sheikh Qasim. Assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Let's get to today's topic, which is the foundation of family in Islam. Why the religion of Islam emphasizes very much on establishing the family, taking the wife and having children, but inside the wedlock, which is the legitimate Shari'i system of thought, something which is unfortunately very much missed in the nowadays liberal capitalist lifestyle of the Western world. You know, just a simple look at the pictures and the lifestyle of the people, even in the U.S. before 60s, 50s, you could find such haya and modesty even in the clothing.
Exactly. Exactly.
See? Yeah. But nowadays, you know, as naked as an animal. Is it so?
I'll allow Sheikh Qasim to answer that. Yes. But not just West, Brother Atta.
Yes.
You would see that attitude even in the East. You know, if you go back and look at the pictures of women in India 50 years ago.
Shrouded,
Yeah, they would actually cover the head. Yes. They would actually pull their your covering over the head so much further down that it literally covered their face, more like a niqab, right? Yes, yes. So the Hindu culture also had something called covering the head and covering the face to the extent of niqab.
Yes.
But then it's the exploitation of the Western culture.
Yes, the chastity.
Exactly. The so that led to the desanctifying the chastity of women and, you know, encouraging them to reveal more and cover less.
You know, I think we've been talking about the philosophy or, you know, the underlying layers of this sort of actually the deviation in the West and, as you said, even in the East. And again, I believe that that's you know, the way that they look at this world, and they are actually looking at the people like, you know, some workers that are there in order for working for them. So the more they are committed, the less they work, you know.
Okay.
So I think that works to their interest in the best way by having, you know, or promoting the ways of lives that have less commitment. So these sorts of relationships out of wedlock, I think, just serves look at them in the best way. Yeah.
Just look at the rate of the white trafficking. You know, white trafficking is a term used for trafficking of the women and girls from the eastern part of the world or from the Eastern Europe to the so-called North and West. You know, the thing is that they traffic human beings for the sexual
and
pleasure.
Literally, they sell them. You know, I was watching one of these TED, you know, talks.
TED talks.
It was the former president of the United States, Jimmy Carter. He was talking about this, and he was giving the statistics of the people who are trafficked. You know, these women, as you said, the white women, and they are literally selling them to, you know, the casinos and, you know, these nightclubs and things like that. And it's, you know, it's happening now, you know, in real
time.
They're
enslaved. Once they're sold, they're enslaved for their life.
And just look at the modeling life, the life of the models. There was also a documentary about the backstage of this model life, you know, the malnutritions that they have, different diseases that they have got. They are used,
like a product.
Sorry to say, as a tissue in my hand now. Yeah. One day beautiful, the other day ugly, taken out of the industry of the modeling and cinematic form. Yeah. Day by day, get high and high and high, and they make a new movement out of that in order to put a seal on the main question, for example, Me Too movement.
Correct.
Okay? See, these movements might answer some of the needs or questions of the female or femininity, for example, the sameness of the wages of the payment in the West or in the U.S. too. But still, it is a big seal on the main problems, and that is, is this really the position of a woman in a society?
In your society, particularly the Western society.
In the Western society. And look how much the feminist movement and the feminists look at the men. They're changing the man into the mother of the house and the woman as the man of the world. Yeah, okay?
Bread earner.
So, yes, this is the same problem we have, unfortunately. We have it. You know, let's get into the Islamic viewpoints and the make a balance of the role of the woman in the family and out of the family. Is it at all any role concern for a woman out of the family, for example, in the society, Shaykh?
I think Islam has very clearly defined the roles of the father and the mother, or if you want to say it, man and the woman, okay. In the society, in the house, in the family as an institution, and society as an institution. Imagine a society where you don't have any female gynecologists, mm-hmm. right? So if you don't have any female gynecs, yes. if you yes. don't have any female doctors who are going to work into hospitals to deliver babies, mm-hmm. what's going to happen to the Islamic system, right? Oh. So it clearly makes logical sense that Islam is not saying that, look, you're a woman, be at home, take care of children, and that's your job. No, Islam said, look, there are needs, and you need to prepare yourself to address those needs. So that's we right. need gynecs in the society, and they have to be women. You can't have male gynecs. Okay. You can't have male doctors who are going to deliver babies, right? Okay. So the space is open.
Yes.
However, Islam also puts certain restrictions where if the job can be done by a man and there is no need for a woman to enter into that field, Islam says, okay. well, don't enter into that field. Okay. Enter into a field which is going to be beneficial for you and for the society and would help millions of other women who are struggling with a particular problem. Yes. So.
We got a program at the radio, Moments of Realization, when the, especially the women and the ladies were asked about the main reason and cause for the conversion to the religion of Islam. They say their respect that Islam has for the very personality of the women.
Yeah.
This is exactly the Western women are looking for, respect. Yeah. Why not testing this way? I mean, hijab, covering yourself, and you know, not the women are not limited to their bodies, you know, and the sexual attractions. Why not testing this way?
In this last Olympics, I remember that it was, I'm not sure which country
German ladies, which covered their host from tip to toe.
Yeah, and they were fined by the, you know, by the Olympics itself, or some organization that, why did you cover your body? Yeah. So you are there to be stripped, you know, out of your
exactly.
Clothes.
And the main reason, the coach answered that, we are not dolls. We are not sexual dolls. We want to cover ourselves from... And look at the latest law in the Senate of the France that they banned hijab for the women in the sport teams of the women ladies. Okay. You see?
In the country of freedom in the world.
Democracy.
In the quotation
marks. Yeah, it's not so-called democracy.
And that's freedom of speech and all that stuff.
Okay. And where the world is going to get to with this manner? This is a question.
It's a very important and a fundamental question that if we... look at the world, that the way it's progressing. I'm just voicing other scholars, you know, the Western scholars who have their point of view. What the Western scholar says is that you're making a mountain out of a mole. Why are you so worried, right? Look, they are getting into a contract. When I say a contract, a relationship, and they're going to have children, and they're going to upbring the children. They're going to take responsibility of the children. They're going to take responsibility of the wife, and the wife is doing the housework. She's cooking. She's upbringing the children. The only thing missing is the legality, which, according to Islam, is one of the fundamental requirements.
Yes.
So what the Western scholars and professors and researchers are saying, that the only element missing is the legality of the marriage. Apart from that, if you look at the whole institution, they are living just like any other married couple. So where's your problem?
Okay.
So, right? So let, I don't know. You guys,
there
can,
was
put a, in your, you guys can put in your view here to contradict them.
That there was a funny TV series recently aside. Whose father, whose mother is this?
Yeah.
And after so many...
DNA test.
DNA test after so many years. And I said, okay, this is my mother. This is my father. Okay, let's have a big hug. I'm crying and shedding tears. Come on, man. Yeah. Is this a family?
I don't believe so, you know.
Children out of wedlock after so many years.
You know,
and
I
now
think...
with shedding tears, you know, this they are really the queen of dramas.
Yeah.
The dramatization of the saddest tragedies, the social tragedies and catastrophes of the society, in order to have it, you know, through a show. Would it be late night show, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, Ellen DeGeneres, or no, the other guys, you know, through the DNA testing, Dr. Ozzy or something like that? You know, they are the queen of dramatization.
Yeah,
all the social problems, and the people believe them. This is the
You know what? You know what? you know, I think they have got to this understanding that they need the institution of family.
Really?
And they know that they have lost this too. Yeah, they have lost this too, you know, their strategies.
Okay.
So they are trying their best in order for reviving the institution of family.
Exactly.
And all those movies that we are actually watching, in the Western movies, they try their best in order for, you know, portraying a sort of a good family that is worth living in and things like that. But what I believe is that the underlying rules, the underlying Western understanding doesn't allow that to happen. You know, as I said, the ones that are controlling this system are not actually allowing the people that are actually soldiers or the workers or the slaves of this society.
Sexual labor, they call it.
Yeah. And, you know, but those sexual labors that we talked about, there were some literal sexual laborers that were so open to detect. But many of these are, covert, actually, and hidden social sexual, actually, workers that are working for these people.
Okay.
And these people are making money out of this problem, this chaos, this sexual chaos.
And see how much insurance, the insurance companies do not support, for example, underage pregnancy and abortion and death out of the abortion for the children, especially the ladies in the U.S. market, And the catastrophe is this underage pregnancy in the U.S. and the rate of abortion, how much high is that, especially among the school girls, there in the U.S., And in most of the cases, the sad news is that it will get into committing suicide.
Yeah, very true. Because they end up being sex workers.
Yes.
They end up being, in working for pornography and porn industry
or something like that. But the case is that they know the problem. And we have some, scholars, sociologists who are not even Muslim, living in a Muslim land. They say, this is all because the chastity, the modesty, the family foundation institution is
that
losing
is
its color.
Into women's, nature.
Nature,
it's not something.
Exactly. Yeah. Like Sheikh Qasim pointed out, that, they know that they need the family system and they're trying to revive it and come back. So if you look at these women in the Western culture, the dating men, the changing men every 2 years or 3 years, you go to them and ask them that why are you doing that? They say, I'm looking for the right kind of a person to get married and settle. And that's even when they're changing, they're looking for someone to settle down with for the rest of their life, right? So they know somewhere deep down that the only right solution is to get married, settle down, have children.
Yes.
So in that process, they were misguided.
Yes.
There's something called conditioning of the subconscious mind.
Yes,
media does that extensively, that the subconscious mind of the people are conditioned to behave in a particular way. And that's why even though they want the marriage system, they're not able to get to it because the subconscious mind is fighting against their desire for the marriage system.
Sometimes the marriage is the final step for a couple.
Exactly.
They've got children. The woman is pregnant. After so many years, finally, they ask for marriage, and the woman is happy.
Exactly.
What is this happiness for?
Exactly.
I don't know. I don't understand.
So when
this.
The guy proposes, she's like on the seventh heaven. Why?
Okay.
If marriage is not that important, then why is it so important that the guy proposes to you and they want to get married and settle? So somewhere deep down in the fitrat, in the innate nature of the women, it is embedded that you have to settle down with someone in a wedlock, and that's the best.
For example, when you look at the Oscars, an actor comes on the stage and says, I've been married to my wife for 40 years. And say, wow. See, this vow shows many things.
Yeah.
That the foundation of the family has lost really its colors in the U.S., especially among the so-called elites of the society.
Yeah.
Okay. So 40 years, 30 years, 25 years, this is a vow for them. and as Sheikh said, in the seventh heaven, when it's proposed for the marriage. Okay, the marriage, the foundation from the very beginning, it shows the husband showing your loyalty to the family and the children and being around and having a happy life and the prosperous life. Being away from the sins, the major ones, the minor ones, bringing up good children in order to continue the path of the father and the mother in a society. And these are the all the good things about having a family and establishing a family, especially according to the Islamic rulings, which I believe has the most beautiful rulings and rights for the women. And you know, husband, both wives and, you know, husbands in a family foundation in Islam. Thank you very much, Sheikh Qasim and Sheikh Qasim for your presence in the program Viewpoints. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Viewpoints. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/Shian Call of Islam page, also a YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah. The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest night, shows me right from wrong in a world that often lies. Cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you. In the limelight.
While the U.S. president refuses to condition military aid, the Zionist regime has toppled more than twice as many Palestinian structures in the West Bank than it had by this point in Trump's term. Stay with us for an article in this regard written by Austin Allman Ryder. This article is titled, Zionist regime surpasses 1,000 demolitions in the occupied West Bank since Joe Biden took office. Stay tuned for more. The rate of the Zionist regime's destruction of Palestinian-owned properties in the occupied West Bank is accelerating at a rapid pace under U.S. President Joe Biden and the Zionist regime's Prime Minister, Naftali Bennett, according to data from the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. Recently, the UN's tally of demolitions carried out since Biden's inauguration eclipsed 1,000. In the 13 months since Biden took office, over 1,300 Palestinians, a majority of whom are children, have been displaced by the demolitions tallied by the UN, which counts each permanent closure or destruction of a residential or commercial property or key piece of infrastructure. At a similar point in President Donald Trump's tenure, on former Zionist regime's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Israeli officials had carried out the demolition of 379 structures that displaced nearly 600 Palestinians, less than half the toll overseen by Biden and Bennett so far. According to Diana Boutou, a Palestinian-Canadian lawyer and scholar at the Institute for Middle East Understanding, Bennett is ramping up these demolitions as a display of strength in hopes of stamping out any remaining hope that Palestinians might one day achieve self-determination. She told Intercept, Bennett's making it clear that this is where the future of Israeli-Palestinian relationship lies. The future lies in the Palestinians being cordoned off into these tiny little ghettos. And all the land surrounding these ghettos will slowly be taken, be stolen, for Israeli settlements. Experts say the accelerating pace of the Zionist regime's demolitions is a direct result of Biden's refusal to pressure Bennett over Palestinian rights. The United States has considerable leverage over the Zionist regime, they point out, and Biden could wield it to end the Zionist regime's aggressive expansionism, potentially within the course of a single conversation. Bhutto said, I don't think it takes more than for him to pick up the phone and actually threaten Bennett. In the 2021 calendar year, the Zionist regimes enforced demolitions of Palestinian-owned structures surged to 907, the second highest level on record, surpassed only by the 1,094 demolitions that were carried out under President Barack Obama in 2016, while Americans were distracted by an acrimonious presidential election. Over 145 demolitions have already occurred in 2022, putting Biden and Bennett on track for another record. And experts say these figures are likely an undercount, given that some events take time to be reported or are never reported at all. The increase joins the resurgence of brazen assassinations in marking a rapid escalation in the Zionist regime's expansionism and ethnic cleansing in the occupied West Bank, and they both add texture to the ongoing backlash to decisions by leading international human rights organizations to explicitly label the Zionist regime's ongoing subjugation of Palestinians as apartheid. While proponents of Palestinian rights have been using the term to describe Israeli oppression for decades, its adoption last year by two influential international organizations, including Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, has renewed attention on the atrocities committed by the Zionist regime. The Zionist regime's authorities often use discriminatory local permitting rules to justify the demolitions of Palestinian structures. Among other iniquities, these rules foreclose thousands of buildings erected by Palestinians who were unable to acquire a permit from ever securing proper licensing, with few exceptions. Meanwhile, the Zionist regime's structures regularly receive retroactive permits. The disparate application of permit laws has long been a key tool of the Zionist regime in enforcement of its multi-tiered system of political rights, as Amnesty International's recent report recounts at length. While the Biden administration made public calls for the demolitions to cease in the last year, activists say the president's refusal to apply meaningful pressure to the Zionist regime undermines his public opposition to its actions. During the 2020 presidential primary, Biden distanced himself from competitors like Senator Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren by pointedly refusing to support conditioning military aid to the Zionist regime as a means to apply pressure on Palestinian rights. Polling from May 2021 by Data for Progress shows a clear majority of Americans and an overwhelming majority of Democrats support policies that would stop the Zionist regime's use of USAID to fund the seizure and destruction of Palestinian properties and to continue their annexation of Palestinian territory. Americans' growing reluctance to pay for the Zionist regime's apartheid likely explains why pro-Israel groups like Democratic Majority for Israel and American Israel Public Affairs Committee have ramped up their involvement in electoral politics, especially in Democratic primaries. Bhutto, who spoke with Intercept from Palestine, is not shocked by Biden's refusal to push Bennett to halt demolitions and settlement expansion. But she expressed a feeling of ongoing disbelief at the refusal of most Democratic politicians, including some progressives, to stand up for the Palestinian people. She told Intercept, "When it comes to demolitions, this is the part that I have never understood. I have worked with many of these families who have lived with the fear of demolition over their head. This is their life. These are their homes. This inflicts real trauma on kids. The fact that Israel's never confronted about this policy is really sick. Instead, we have candidates that come forward and just behave as though this is normal."
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is your host, Musa al-Bahadali, and you are now listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we discuss problems and other issues parents have regarding the Islamic upbringing of their children. As usual, all of the answers provided in this program are based upon the Holy Quran and upon the narrations of the Prophet and of the household of the Prophet, peace be upon them all, supplemented by scientific data and facts. Joining us in the studio is our dear friend and Islamic researcher, Sayyid Abdullah al-Musawi from the Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, I welcome you and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Today, dear listeners, we will be continuing our discussion on how we should grow confidence in our children. Previously, we mentioned, for example, that one of the things that we as parents can do to inspire this self-confidence and to build on it in our children is to choose a good name for them, a virtuous name, and also to provide a safe environment for them, and also to make them feel and make them know that they are in a safe environment and they have emotional and physical and all kinds of support that they can always find at their parents. So, dear Said, what other ways can we as parents utilize to inspire even more confidence in our children?
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم. So we said in order for us to increase self-confidence in our kids, there are things that we should do and things that we should not do. Among the things that we should not do, we should not give our children a bad adjective. We should not call them and name them something that is negative, which sometimes we don't seem to be able to get rid of this bad habit where we constantly call them like weak, not being able to do this, I don't know, you're stupid, you're this. And so we have plenty, we have a long list of negative attributes that we can attribute to our kids in their daily life and, you know, and them doing their chores or doing their work.
Right.
That is something that parents should stay away from, because the more you give negative attributes, the more they sink in that child and the more he acts upon them, and it will make them definitely have low self-esteem.
And just to stress on a point that I've heard many times being made regarding this is that some people think this is criticism, that this is constructive criticism.
Well, there's nothing about constructive about calling a person a negative attribute. I mean, if I want to give you constructive criticism, I have to, you know, there's a mistake that we can try to fix. No, by calling you names, if I call a person an idiot or stupid or a weakling or a dork, I mean, what constructive criticism in that? The only thing is in this is me getting my own satisfaction at getting at you.
Yeah. So let's keep that in mind.
Yeah. So we say these things that people need to stay away from completely. Another thing that we need to do with our children to increase their self-esteem is actually giving them chances to do things.
Right. Let's expand on that after a quick break.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing different manners we can use to inspire confidence in our children. Now, just before we went on a break, dear Said, you said that we should let our children do things. Now, what do you mean by that?
Now, with children, because in life everything for them is a trial and error. They do things, they fail, they do things, they fail, and they learn.
Right.
Now, some parents, sadly, when the children do something and they fail, they never give them the chance to repeat that same failure again and again until they learn from it.
Right.
Not every child learns from the same mistake. Sometimes you might find a child who puts in his hand in fire and he gets burnt and he feels the pain. And you can see that he might repeat that same thing again maybe a few days later because that hasn't sunk in his mind yet.
Right.
So you see that kids sometimes throughout their life, even when they become, you know, at teenagers, they will make certain mistakes.
Of course.
The idea is to give them a chance to make that mistake and learn from it. Some people don't do that to their children. Now, that giving them chances to do things again and again, either be it for something good or for something bad that they've done, it gives them the confidence that they require in obviously becoming better people, which increases their confidence, which is what we
also
are
helps
seeking.
With their ambition as well and with their tenacity in a good way, because if they are taught firsthand that trial and error, but you gotta keep going, then they will adapt this mentality and carry it out throughout their entire lives.
True. And another thing that we need to do for our children in order to increase their confidence is let them be have self-reliance. They rely on themselves to do things. If the child want to dress himself, let them. If the child want to wear his own shoe, let them. If the child wants to make his own, food or whatever, let them. Give them that self-confidence in themselves in making things.
We did discuss this before about how it is good that they want to be independent.
Exactly. We'll discuss this in more details. So we need to give them the opportunity to become self-reliant and do things for themselves. That will definitely increase their self-confidence. Also, putting laws for children, like a map that they have to work through throughout the day. These are the things that need to be done. These are the things that shouldn't be done, and so on and so forth. So the child grows with order rather than chaos. Chaos never gives us order. So we have to make sure that the child, when he sees order in the house and in his life, it grows his self-confidence that I can do this, I can do that, I can do this, I can do that. So the more he does them or she does them, the more confidence they will become. So this is also something that we need to keep in mind. Another thing that we should not do is not to put too much restraining condition and orders on the kids. Now, sometimes our don'ts are much more than our do's when it comes to children, or should be vice versa, or at least it should be an equal amount.
Right, and with that, let's go ahead and take a quick break.
The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam said, "Honor your children and teach them good manners."
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. Today we are discussing ways we can use as parents to inspire self-confidence and self-reliance in our children. Now, Saeed, just before we went on a break, you said that we shouldn't restrain them too much. And what exactly does that entail?
We are saying that sometimes as parents, we ask our children not to do so many things, and even sometimes simple things. For example, don't open the fridge.
Yeah.
Don't eat the fruits. Don't do, you know, this. Don't sit on this chair. And like it's things that child can do. And if he does them, there will be no harm in doing. And I've seen this on a first account where some of the mothers, for example, they tell the children, for example, not to eat certain fruits or certain sweets or certain foods, and even though they are right in front of them. Now, either the mother, for example, is trying to teach her child to behave himself, or she's trying to tell her child to have self-control.
Right.
But it's not appropriate. It's not the right time to impose these things on a child when he is just a child and there's something in front of him. So we end up asking our children not to do a lot of things. So whether when it comes to their rooms, when it comes to them sitting around with us, when it comes to dealing with people outside, when it comes to them walking outside, when it comes to every matter of their life, you see that we put too much don'ts and less do's. Okay?
Right.
And that obviously will lower the more don'ts we put. It's a condition, it's a lock, it's a chain that will obviously lower their self-esteem. So we're saying, obviously, when there's something wrong, put a don't on it. If it's something wrong with something haram. But if something allowed, something permissible, something they can do, try to lessen these don'ts, turn it into an advice. It's better not to eat too much fruit, for example. It's better not to eat junk. It's better not to eat that.
but don't make it a condition that you should not eat this.
Right, like, so do not force them.
Yeah, like not a wristband.
Let them take their decision. Let them decide on their own.
Mm-hmm. So we're saying always the less condition there are, the more self-confidence they will have. Another thing that helps and increases the confidence of a child is your monitoring to the child.
Right.
When the child feels that he's monitored by his parents and they are not letting him loose or at least to be by himself, he feels more confident. And not only that you need to be monitoring the child, but at the same time that you need to intervene at the right moment. Some people, they monitor their children and they just jump at the first instant that they think the child is going to make a mistake or going to do something wrong. Now we say, no, that's not the appropriate time. Let them be, if the mistake is not, you know, a great mistake or a big mistake. Sometimes we said, we'll let it pass.
Of course, it goes without saying to say that when we say monitor, because some people don't think monitor, they think about completely controlling the child.
No, not self-control, no, of course not. No,
because so then it becomes a horrible presence instead of a safe and reassuring presence.
When you say monta, it's like when you're saying monta, for example, their akhlaq, their behavior, who they talk with, who they deal with, what they do online.
So be the,
things that might have devastating effect on them.
These be the counselor, I'd rather say.
Yeah.
Be the advisor.
Exactly. So either way, be know what your kids are up to and get involved and intervene at the right time. Not at any time, at the right time.
And on that note, we will have to end today's program because we are out of time. I thank the dear Sayyid for his insightful knowledge. I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. If our dear listeners have any suggestions, feedback, or some comments, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir. Alternatively, you can also visit our website, parstoday.com. You can also find us on various social media websites, such as on Twitter and Instagram, under the call handle of Call of Islam Radio. Thank you for tuning in.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Hello everyone and welcome to Delight. Let's begin with an artistic spirit. Impressive, creative, wonderful. That's how visitors describe the works of Vincent Hoch, a Dutch post-impressionist painter being displayed in an impressive art exhibition in the Argentine capital. Hundreds of Van Gogh's paintings are projected onto the walls of the gallery. The image bloom and ripple in front of the audience, creating a 3D-like and immersive experience. Van Gogh was one of the most famous and influential figures in Western art history of the 19th century. He is largely remembered for his impressionist style, a break from the old traditional art technique. He is also famous for his turbulent life, which was made for outlandish, emotionally charged paintings. An art gallery in London, Tate Modern, is hosting an exhibition with a remarkable stand
span of surrealist works. The exhibition, dubbed Surrealism Beyond Borders, features more than 170 artworks, ranging from paintings and sculptures to photography and films. Works by more than 150 artists from over 60 years are on the display. The exhibit also has a wide geographical span and includes surrealist artworks from different countries. Some of the most prominent artists whose works are being exhibited include Pablo Picasso, Salvador Dali, and Ted Jones. The exhibition will run until August 9th. It is now well-established facts that animals feel, think, behave, and even experience pain. Thus, they should be treated with the same respect as humans, while a center in the Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo is doing the same. Life-saving services to injured apes. The sanctuary, located in a vast national park, has been active for two decades. The center houses scores of chimpanzees, gorillas, and endangered great apes. Bonobos and bombos as well. Most of the animals that are brought to the sanctuary were rescued from poachers. The staff there provide medical care to the injured animals until they are healthy enough to be integrated into a group of their fellow species.
Students and staff gather for sizzling meat sandwiches as they signal their orders with their hands at a food truck in Pakistan's capital city of Islamabad. The Abbey Cow is no ordinary food truck parked on the campus of the Millennium Universal College. It's fully managed and run by staff with hearing impairments. At the beginning of the queue, a diagram shows simple phrases in sign language which customers use to order their food and communicate. The food truck is Pakistan's first mobile restaurant entirely staffed by deaf workers, providing an economic opportunity for them.
Having the startup here at our campus has been really fruitful. Not only have we created more awareness around the sign language amongst our students, but we've also created an inspiration for TMUC students to look up and pursue entrepreneurship as a career choice.
The project developer, Aisha Raza, says the majority of deaf youth end up unemployed and face inequality and discrimination. She says she wanted to create an opportunity for her brothers to economically thrive. The goal is to bridge communication gaps between the deaf and hearing communities and help remove language barriers. The food truck is the brainchild of a family where both parents and their sons are either totally or partially deaf. Last but not least, the 16th Fajr International Poetry Festival has wrapped up with an award ceremony in Tehran. The literary event aims to honor Persian poets from Iran and the world with the ultimate goal of elevating Persian poetry. Yusuf Jalali has more.
It's an occasion to honor poets and poetry. The 16th edition of Fajr International Poetry Festival saw its closing ceremony in Tehran, where the best Persian poetry works of the year were acknowledged and awarded. During the event, participants from Iran and other countries contended in different categories, including classic poetry, modern poetry, and children and young adults.
I won the prize for the best poetry book for children and young adults. My book is titled Silence in the Mother Tongue. I'm so glad that my effort is seen, judged, and acknowledged by top Iranian literary personalities from the jury of the festival.
Certainly, Fajr Poetry Festival is of great significance to me as an Afghan poet. Here, literary experts from Iran, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, and many parts of the world can network and make joint efforts to promote the Persian language.
Iran is known as the land of poets, being home to many world-renowned literary figures over the centuries, including Rumi, Hafez, and Khayyam. Experts here believe Persian poetry has no expiry date, and not only do Iranians still read ancient poems, they're also interested in modern prose and poetry.
Poetry is a beautiful language that speaks the beauty of the world, and such a language always communicates very well with the hearts of human beings. Iranians have long understood the beauty of this language and still listen to it and read it in its every form and genre.
Fajr International Poetry Festival was launched in 2006 as a platform for Persian poets from Iran and other Persian-speaking countries to get together for the elevation of Persian poetry. However, the literary event has grown to encompass non-Persian poets who are interested in Iranian literature.
Poetry holds a special position among Iranians, and you can rarely find an Iranian family that doesn't have a poetry book in their bookshelves. Now, aside from acknowledging Persian literary figures and poets, Fajr Festival seeks to preserve this long-standing culture and introduce it to the world. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Color, beauty, and entertainment. The French city of Nice hosts a dazzling and flashy event. The so-called Battle of the Flowers took place on Saturday. Performers on top of animal-themed floats waved at the crowd and threw flowers at the audience while musicians played live. Each of the 16 floats was decorated with around 3,000 flowers. Also, thousands of people attended the event. The Battle of the Flowers is part of the carnival in Nice, which has been held annually for almost 150 years. An endangered Mediterranean monk seal has embarked on a new solo adventure after spending months under the care of conservationists. Four-month-old Evie was released back into the wild on February 15th in northern Greece. Evie was rescued when she was only 7 days old. She had been washed ashore and separated from her nursing mother during a storm. However, conservationists found the lucky seal and started taking care of her. Even though Evie's health was poor, she recuperated quickly.
She was really dehydrated in the beginning, which is very common with pups that separate from their mothers at such an early age. And the first few weeks were critical for her health because there's basically no way to replenish, like to replace the mother's milk. So we have a certain protocol and a food regimen that we provide along with vitamins and other supplements to the seal. And thankfully, in the first few weeks, she showed signs of her health status became better.
The conservationists hope Evie will be able to join a community of her species soon. They will be tracking her movements with a chip. There are only a few hundred Mediterranean monk seals left in the wild. About half of them live in Greece. Entrapment from fishing, pollution, depletion of food resources, and climate change are some of the threats facing the species.
History shows a gun barrel never stops people from acquiring their learning tools. A bookshop in the besieged Gaza Strip is a testimony as book lovers flooded the store months after it was flattened in an Israeli airstrike. The new Samir Mansour bookshop, funded by an international donor campaign, now stands some 200 meters from its original site. It was destroyed by an Israeli airstrike in the west of Gaza City last year. The new shop is spread across two floors and is stocked with some 400,000 books. They range from school texts to the Quran to Arabic translations of European literary classics. Hundreds of people, including writers and Palestinian officials, attended the bookshop's reopening. The store first opened its doors 30 years ago and is considered the oldest and the biggest in Gaza.
The City of London usually welcomes arts and culture from all over the world, including Iran. In our next report, Bianca Rahimi will be taking us to a performance that fuses music from across the East.
A dream has become a reality. The Conference of the Birds, composed by the brilliant young musician Mehsan Marvasti and inspired by a poem of the same name written by poet Attar of Nishapur in the 12th century, performed here in London. It's a story all Iranians are familiar with, about an epic journey to find the Simurgh.
The Simurgh is to the east what the phoenix is to the west, a mythical creature that symbolizes transformation. And the story of the Simurgh is a spiritual one, full of courage, determination, and self-discovery.
Well, I think it's the first time I've seen so prominently advertised a non-Western musical traditional concert. And I've got a long-standing interest in music from the different parts of the Islamic world. It kind of evokes sort of deeper feelings, spiritual feelings. And the fact that this specific concert is about kind of a spiritual poem, it taps into something which I think a lot of us are looking for, especially in this post-pandemic, current pandemic situation. We're looking for some deeper meanings. So I think it will be striking a chord for a lot of people.
It's a mix of fusion of different music, and that's always interesting. And it's Eurasian music, and it uses different instruments from across Asia to represent birds, and it just sounded lovely.
Even though there are differences, cultural differences between these places and these peoples, and those differences should be recognised in general, that through things like music and art, there can also be synergy, and like, yeah, things can work together as well.
5 years in the making, the Conference of the Birds, conducted by Farnoush Behzad, brought together musicians and instruments from across the world. It fuses Azeri, Chinese, Indian, Arabic, Afghan, Armenian and Persian music, brought to the audience by a Western orchestra. The performance was accompanied by two elocutionists who narrated the story and animated clips of birds and their migratory lives. The art and culture of Iran needs no introduction, renowned worldwide. But young Iranian artists living far from home are always looking for ways to capture the spirit of their homeland and offer Western audiences a taste of Iran. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Axolotls are unique Mexican amphibians at risk of extinction, and many conservation programs are now trying to save these strange-looking animals. An ecological park in Mexico City is the latest place to celebrate them. It has held a ceremony for releasing baby axolotls into their natural habitat, which is the mud. These amphibians are so special that even a number of city officials attended the event. Conservationists say having a clean environment is key to their survival.
I've managed to breed up to 22,000 axolotls. In all of Xochimilco, there are 90 axolotls across 90 kilometers, but the quality of the axolotls depends on the quality of biologist you are. Bad quality water has killed anywhere from 12,000 to 15,000.
Researchers have discovered that axolotls can absorb oxygen from the surface of their skin and are therefore more vulnerable to dirty water and environments. More than 70 breeding centers across Mexico have joined the rally of saving these critically endangered species. Many are even marketing them as ideal pets, but to animal advocates, keeping axolotls as pets is a definite no-no.
IRIB English Radio.